Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amud Bet. The Mishnah is continuing what we've seen in the previous two Mishnayot, which is that this is an individual who is selling a Beit Kura Afar to another party. In the first Mishnah, we had the description of it when it said Stam, or with the Kafa Dimyon. In the second Mishnah, we had qualifiers that were added onto it. For instance, Mida Bechevel, or Hein Chaser, Hein Yeter. And as we noted in the previous Mishnah, when you say Mida Bechevel, it means that you're selling the exact amount or the exact measurement that is being articulated in the sale. On the other hand, if you use Hein Chaser, Hein Yeter, it means more or less. So it's not as exact, it has a little bit of deviation, or there is inexactitude to the expression that you are giving. Now, in our Mishnah, you have a situation in which he uses both languages. Obviously, the languages are mutually exclusive because one says exactly and the one says more or less. So the question is, when he uses both of these languages, how do we view his expression or statement? And that's what the Mishnah says. Mida bechevel ani mocher lecha, hein chaser, hein yeter. So he uses both languages and he says, I'm selling you exactly the amount, the Beit Kura Afar, but I'm also doing it more or less. So which one of those governs in this case? Bitel hein cheser hein yeter mida bechevel. In this case, the latter language trumps, and therefore, hein cheser hein yeter, more or less, will override or annul the first statement that he made, which was mida bechevel, that'll be the exact amount. And in the reverse, if he said first hein cheser hein yeter, and then afterwards said mida bechevel, again, this is all in one statement that is qualifying his sale to the individual. Then over here again, bitel mida bechevel hein cheser hein yeter. The latter language will trump again, and therefore the mida bechevel, which means that it's an exact measurement, will govern in this case and will annul the statement of more or less divrei ben nanas. This is the position of ben nanas, which we'll see in the Gemara in 1 second, is based or premised on a view of tfos lashon acharon, that we always go after the latter language of the individual, because we believe that the person who reversed his position was either bisafek, he was trying to articulate what he wanted to say and it took him time to get there, but then when he comes to the finality of what he wants to say and articulate, that is what he means. And therefore, in all these cases, we're going to go after the latter of the languages. It will govern our understanding of what he's trying to say. And it's called, in the parlance of the Gemara, tfos lashon acharon. We always go after the latter statement of the individual. Amar Rabbi Abba bar Mamel, Amar Rav, chukim alav chavirav al benanas. Rav says that benanas has others that disagree with that position. The only thing that Rav is telling us in this statement is that benanas has other Tanaim who disagree with the position. Rav does not clarify for us, number one, what their position is, as opposed to Ben Nanas, meaning that he just says that the Chachamim argue. The Chachamim can argue for different reasons. They can argue because they believe Tfos Lashon Rishon. They believe that a person means what he said first. The first statement he makes governs. And we just assume everything he said afterwards was confusion, or he was getting mixed up, but not that that changed or somehow qualified the first statement that he made. Or it's another possibility is that they disagree because they think it is a safek. We don't know which of the two languages govern, or maybe both languages govern over here, and it's a safek. So Rav does not clarify for you what the dissenting opinion believes. That's number one. Number two is that Rav himself doesn't tell you what he believes. All he says is that Benanas is in our Mishnah. The Chachamim disagree with Benanas. Maika Mashmalan. Gemara wants to know, what is Rav telling us by telling us that there is a dissenting opinion, or that the Chachamim disagree with Benanas? Tanina, it's already an explicit Mishnah that we saw at the end of Baba Metzia. Maseh B'Tzipori, there was this incident, this case, in Tzipori, Bechad Shesachar Merchatz Michaviro B'Shnemasar Zuhuvim L'Shana. Person rented the bathhouse from his friend for 12 gold coins per year. Dinar Zahav L'Chodesh, 1 Dinar Zahav per month. So over a 12-month period, it would make sense that you give 1 Dinar Zahav per month. That's why the total adds up to 12 Dinar Zahav for the year. Uba Maseh L'Fnei Rabban Shimon Gamliel V'Lifnei Rabbi Yossi. And then this incident came before Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Rabbi Yossi, and the reason that the case ended up in court was that the year that he ended up renting it from him turned out to be a leap year. Based on how he articulated the rental agreement will impact on what we do with that extra month. If you say that the transaction was 12 gold coins per year, then it doesn't matter whether it's a 12-month year or a 13-month year, it's a year, and he has to pay 12 for the year no matter what the year looks like. On the other hand, if he said that it is 1 gold coin per month, then if there's an additional month in the year, he's going to have to pay an additional gold coin for that month that would be added into the year. Over here in the transaction, both languages were articulated. B'shnei masar zuvim l'shana, 12 gold coins per year. Dinar zahav b'chodesh, 1 gold coin per month. So now, we don't know what he meant then in that situation where there's an extra month added to the year. Did he mean the Lashon Rishon, where he said that it's a yearly price, and therefore the 13th month would be subsumed under the rental agreement? Or do we say he meant the latter language, where he defined it as a monthly payment? If there's an extra month, he's going to have to make an additional payment. So therefore, Obama said, lifnei Rabban Shem Gamliel, lifnei Rabbi Yossi, v'amru, yachloku et chodesh ha'ibur. They split that extra month. So now, based on that Mishnah that we have in Bava Metzia, you see that when we have language that gives both impressions, similar to our case over here, where you have language that says exact and a language that says more or less. Over there, they have a language that says this is the price per year, this is the price per month, and we don't know which one governs. The Chachamim, in that case, say that it is Yachloku, they split it. Or in essence, what the Chachamim are saying is that it is a Safik. So what do I need Rav to tell me that the Chachamim argue in Benanas? It's obvious from the Mishnah in Baba Metzia that that's the case that they argue, because over there, instead of saying Tfos Lashon Acharon, which would be the position of Benanas, Benanas over there would say you go after the latter language. The latter language was that you're paying 1 gold coin per month, and you have to pay for the extra month. There's no Safik, yet the Chachamim say a Safik. So it's obvious from that Mishnah that there is a dissenting opinion to Benanas, or the position of the Chachamim disagrees with him. It says, Imahotam, had you only had that Mishnah in Baba Metzia, Hava Minahotam Hu, over there, you're not clear about what the second language does. Is the second language a reversal of his previous statement? Meaning that he made the statement, it's 12 gold coins per year. And then he says, you know what? It's really 1 gold coin per month. And so he changed his mind and he reversed his position. Or the other option is to say that it is just an explanation. An explication on the previous statement. So here, the two possible ways to view this. One is like the Rishbam who says over here, that even Benanas would agree to that Mishnah in Baba Metzia. The difference being that the Mishnah over here in our case, the two statements are mutually exclusive. There's no way you can be exact and then be more or less. Since they are mutually exclusive, you have to pick which of the two languages governs. Benana says the principle is Tfos Lashon Acharon. We always go after the latter statement. There, in the case of the Merchatz, what the Gemara is pointing out is that the two languages are not necessarily mutually exclusive. You could read the language as being contradictory and say that it's either 12 gold coins per year or 1 gold coin per month. And those statements are contradictory. And therefore, you would say in that case that he, Hadarbe, he reversed his position. He changed his mind. And therefore, you would say, Tfos Lashon Acharon. On the other hand, there's an equally plausible explanation for that Mishnah to say, Perushe Kamifarish, that he is only explicating on the first statement that was there. And in that case, you don't have to decide between the two languages. It's actually one statement, and just a clarification of that statement. And therefore, even Benanas would agree over there that you split the difference, Yachloku, because it's not clear that he meant to contradict or undermine his previous statement. Could have been that he was just explaining the previous statement. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, reads it is, V'lo matzino the mishat mihocha desfir lo rabbonon do lo azlin and batar lashon acharon. You can't prove anything with regards to the Chachamim's position. So instead of saying like the Rashbam that Benanas could even agree in that case, the Rabbeinu Gershom is saying instead that the Chachamim's position over there is not clear. You can't prove that they don't think that Tfos Lashon Acharon works. Because in a case where the language was contradictory, like our Mishnah, maybe they would agree with Ben Manas that Tfos Lashon Acharon. Over there, their opinion is premised on the fact that you have a Safek. A Safek as to whether he meant to reverse his position, or whether he meant to explain his position. Now, the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains what Perushe Kamifarish means is very simply, the Perushe Kamifarish le v'hachi kamar. He's just expanding on his previous statement, Yudbet Zuvim l'shana, 12 gold coins per year, Dahainu, which is the equivalent of v'chol chodesh v'chodesh dinar, paying 1 dinar zahav per month. So that the explication is a very simple idea of he's just making it clear that, ew, it's 12 months, I'm giving you this for a year, for 12 zuvim, which turns out to be 1 gold coin per month. But he's not making any statement about the nature of the rental. On the other hand, the Rashbam believes that Perushei Kamifarish is that explication actually has halachic impact. And that it's not simply he's just coming to articulate more clearly that 12 gold coins per year means 1 gold coin per month, but rather he's actually trying to change the dynamic of the rental agreement. And that is because Chazal believe ain't schirut mishtalemet ele basof. And when it comes to schirut to rental, the obligation to pay the rental is only at the end of the term. That means if the expressed rental agreement is 12 gold coins per year, the renter doesn't have to pay until the end of the 12 months elapse or until the end of the year that elapses. This person wants to get paid on a monthly basis. So therefore he says, look, the price is 12 gold coins per year, but I want it to be 1 gold coin per month because I want the rental agreement to expire monthly. So therefore you have to pay me every month. In addition, I'll have a right to annul the contract or the relationship anytime I want, because every month, in essence, is a full schirut, and then there's a renewal for the next month automatically. And so therefore, he gains by adding on this additional language to normative implications, which is, number one, he can collect his rent every month. Number two is he has a right to throw the renter out at any point at the end of the month. So the expression of Harushay Gamifarish is not simply just a clarification of his position or making it absolutely clear, but rather it has a luchic impact, and that's why Perushay Kamifarish. But either way that you explain, what we're saying is that Mishnah above Mimtziah is not conclusive about the Chachamim's position, or is not necessarily impossible for Rabban Nanas to subscribe to that Mishnah. Because over there, you have other possible explanations. It's not simply two contradictory statements. That's one possible explanation. But there's another alternative, which is Perushay Kamifarish. Obviously, in our Mishnah, you can't say that. And therefore, Rav had to come along and tell us, despite the fact that we can't come to a conclusion from the Mishnah above Mitzia, I'm telling you that the Chachamim disagree with Benanas, and they do not subscribe to this position of Tfos Lashon Acharon. And their position in Baba Mitzia is not only there in Baba Mitzia, but would be everywhere that they believed in Safek. And that's why the Gemara concludes, of Ahocha, the Vadaika, other Bey, Emelo, over here, where in our Mishnah, he clearly contradicted his first statement, and he is reversing his previous statement. There, you would have thought that maybe the Chachamim could agree, or, again, Benanas wouldn't have to disagree with that Mishnah in Baba Mitzia, and we could just read our Mishnah as being Tfos Lashon Acharon like Ben Nanas, and say the Chachamim agree in that case. Kamash Malan Rav, that that's not the case, and that the Chachamim disagree, even in this situation where there is a contradictory statement, they still say it's a fake and Yachloku, and don't say Tfos Lashon Acharon. Now we're going to have another statement here by Shmuel, very similar to Rav's statement, but with little nuance, and those nuances are going to cause the question of the Gemara to go in a different direction, which is Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Zo Divrei Ben Nanas. Similar to Rav, who believes that the authorship of our Mishnah is Ben Nanas. Aval Chachamim Omrim, Aleich Achar Pachot Shebelishonot. On the other hand, the Chachamim disagree and say you go after the lesser of the languages, which we'll explain in one second. So Shmuel's statement adds a little bit of information that we didn't have from Rav's statement. Rav just said, Ben Nanas is the author of Mishnah, Chachamim argue. But that was it. He was missing, number one, what he personally believed, and number two is, what is the position of the Chachamim? Shmuel here takes care of both of those issues. First of all, he says that the Chachamim's position is, Aleich Achar Pachot Shebelishonot. So he gives us the reasoning behind the Chachamim who dissent or disagree with Ben Nanas. Number two is, he says, Zo Divrei, and then Aval. Usually when an Amora says that, he's stating that that is my opinion, that whatever is being said here is a Dat Yachid, and I subscribe to another opinion. And that's what he's saying over here. Zo Divrei Ben Nanas. When the Mishnah says that, that means that that's Ben Nanas' opinion, it's a Dat Yachid, and I don't subscribe to that. Aval. But the Chachamim say, and that's where I subscribe to their position. Shmuel gives us two additional pieces of information, again, that Rav didn't give us. Number one, what is the position of the Chachamim? Number two, what he personally believes is the Halacha, which is that it is like the Chachamim and not like Ben Nanas. Now, Pachot Shebelishonot, the way the Rashbam reads it is, in essence, it is a safek that favors the muhzak. In this case, the mocher has the chazaka because he's still holding the property that he's going to sell. Therefore, the burden of proof is on the buyer. That's what the Rashbam says over here, that achar oto lashon shemafchit kocho shelokeach. You have there the language that diminishes the power of the lokeach over here, because he is the motzi mechavir ola varaya, and therefore we will favor the mocher in this situation. That means that in our Mishnah, where it says mida bechevel and hein chaser hein yeter, it would depend on what was the deviation from the contracted value or measurement that you were giving. If it's in excess of that, which is that the mocher gave too much, then we'll say we go after the language of mida bechevel. We said, I meant to say it exact, and therefore any deviation is wrong and you need to return me the property, or you have to pay for the property. On the other hand, if he undergave what was articulated over here, then we will give him the window of Rova Kav Lissa'ah, because he said Hein Chaser Hein Yeter. So the Mocher will get the benefit of the doubt in both cases. Since we're B'Safek, and it's Motzi Mechaver Lo Avaraya, and he's the Mokzak, we're going to say that if it exceeded the amount of property that was supposed to be given, it'd have to be refunded. If he diminished the amount of property that he's supposed to give vis-a-vis the measured amount, then in that case, we will favor the Mocher again and say that he gets a window. He said more or less. And this is more or less, and therefore it's subsumed and there is Mechila. It would be advantageous to the Mocher in both cases because he is the Mukzak in the property. That's the way that the Rashbam learns. And if you learn it, look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's in the first wide lines in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, Pachot shel lashonot means achar lashon katzar. You go after the shortest of the statements. Kevin darmalay mita bechevel hein chaser hein yeter. Since he says both exactly and more or less, exactly or mida bechevel is the shorter of the two languages. And therefore it would be irrelevant in which order that he said it. Doesn't matter if he said mida bechevel first or he said hein chaser hein yeter first. In both those cases, we will go after the shorter of the lishonot. And therefore, since over here mida bechevel is the shorter of the lishonot, that will govern the transaction. And we'll say that it's mida bechevel, and that's it. Hein chaser hein yeter is left out. So the way that Rabbeinu Gershom learns is pachot shev lishonot means literally the lesser of the languages, the smaller, the shorter of the languages, that will govern because we assume that the shorter expression is a better articulation of what he really wanted to do. And everything else was additional verbiage that was unnecessary. On the other hand, the way the Rishbam learns is that pachot shev lashonot means that we are mafchit the power or the rights of the lokeach. In this instance, we're b'safek. And motzi mechaver olav araya, the mukzak is the mocher. And therefore, Motzi Mechaver Olav Araya is the burden of proof of the Lokeach. And so the rights will be given to the Mocher, or will give the advantage to the Mocher in all these instances. It is true that if the transaction had already taken place, and now they're arguing about the money, that if the Mukzak changes over here in the Lokeach, the buyer becomes the Mukzak. And now the Mocher is trying to extract money for it, that might actually change, based on this, who it favors. For the Rashbam, if you extrapolate what he's saying, if the Mukzak is the Lokeach, then the Lokeach would have the advantage, and therefore we'd read it to his advantage, both statements, rather than that of the Mocher. On the other hand, the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom reads it, it would be irrelevant. Because we go after Pachot Shev Lashonot, means the shorter or the shortest phraseology that could be used over here. And that would be irrespective of who's holding the land now, it's just a question of what is the shortest expression, and we consider that to be what he really meant. So the Gemara says now, Zo velo svirle. When the Enamora makes an expression like this, that means that he thinks that's Ben Nanas's opinion, but that means that Shmuel himself does not subscribe to Tflos Lashon Acharon, that we go after the ladder of languages. Va Rabu Shmuel Dame Tavayu. What about what we saw, that we saw in Baba Metzia, as well as in Baba Batra? The Rav and Shmuel Darmei Tavayu, Kur Bishloshim, Ani Mocher Lecha. The person says a Kur, which is 30 Sa'ah for 30 Sela. Yachzol Achzorbo Afilu B'Sachrona. Person has a right to renege or retract the deal all the way until the last Sa'ah is given. I mean, there's no Kinyan here that finalizes the transaction until the entire amount is given to the buyer. As long as the seller is counting it out and he gives him 15, 16, 17 sa'ah, all the way up to 29 sa'ah, he can pull out of the transaction at any point. Same is true of the buyer as well, because there's been no kinyan over here. The kinyan's only finalized when he reaches the quantity that he agreed to sell, because the way that the sale was articulated was that I'm selling you the kur for 30 sela, and therefore until you reach that final quantity, he's not chayav to pay the 30 sela. Or the transaction is not finalized because there's no kinyan until the total quantity has been transferred. On the other hand, if he expresses it, kor b'shloshim, he says that I'm going to sell you a kor b'shloshim, sa'a b'sela. Every sa'a is equal to a sela. Again, those languages are both synonymous. One is just saying that a kor, which is made up of 30 sa'a, you're going to pay 30 sela for. The other one just says that you're going to pay a sela per sa'a. And therefore, if I'm selling you a kor, it means 30 sela for the 30 sa'a. If he uses this expression, kor b'shloshim, sa'a b'sela, ni mocher lecha, rishon, rishon kana. In that case, as he measures out the sa'a by sa'a, that is a finality to that transaction. We look at it as 3 or 30 different transactions rather than one big transaction. And therefore, every time the sa'a transfers over to the ownership of the lokeach, then the lokeach now becomes obligated to pay, and that transaction is finalized by that kinyan. Now, in that latter part of the statement of Rav and Shmuel, the person made both statements. He said kor b'shloshim, which would mean that he's giving a kor for 30 sela, But that means that the transaction revolves around a single core. On the other hand, he continues to say, sa'ah b'sela. Every sa'ah, the component parts of the core, each one of them is worth a sela. So here you have, in a sense, contradicting language. They're saying the same thing, but they're expressing it differently, which is instead of saying it's one big sale, it's saying that it's a sale of a number of components. The difference being whether there's a kinyan along the way or not. And over there, Rav and Shmuel both say that you have a right to retract in the first case. And in the second case, you do not have a right to retract. As each sa'ah goes through, that part of the transaction is completed. Or in essence, what they're saying is tfos lashon acharon. You go after the latter language there. The latter of his statements was sa'ah b'sela. And therefore, that would be the governing principle for this transaction. And every time the seller passes hands, it will be a completion of the transaction. So now we see that Shmuel seemingly holds tfos lashon acharon. And if that's the case, why does he say zo divrei ben Anas, implying that that's ben Anas' opinion, but I don't hold like it? Sounds like he does hold like that, and he does believe in tfos lashon acharon. Ella zo visvirle. You have to read the statement of the zo divrei ben Anas, meaning that's the ben Anas, and that's what I believe as well. Even though that's not the normal reading of it, nevertheless, there are times where you could say that. And the Gemara is now concluding that's what Shmuel must have meant, which is that this is Ben Anas' opinion, and I also subscribe to Ben Anas' opinion. Where it says, Umi Sfirle, can you really say that Shmuel holds like Ben Anas about Tfos Lashon Acharon? Varma Shmuel, doesn't Shmuel say about that Mishnah about Merchatz and Boba Metzia, Bababa Emtza Chodesh Askinan? The case there is, it's only if he comes in the middle of the month. But if he comes in the beginning of the month, kulo lemaskir, then it all belongs to the maskir. But sofa chodesh, if he comes at the end of the month, kulo lesocher. Everything goes to the socher. So actually, if you remember, we had a nekmar rav metzia, a machloket amoraim, three-way machlok between Rav Shmuel and Rav Nachman, as to how to explain the position of the chachamim in that mishnah. We saw before that the chachamim say that yachloku, it's a safek, therefore yachloku. Rav over there says that had I been there, I would have disagreed with them and said that it always belongs to the socher. And that the socher is the beneficiary of that language in every case. And he gets to keep the property for that 13th month without having to make any compensation. The reason is, and we'll see this later in the Gemara, I'm just giving it away now, is that Rav holds like Ben Anas, tfos lashon acharon. And therefore, in the case of the Merchatz, he believes that, just like Ben Anas does in our Mishnah, that the latter language should govern, because the latter language is a reversal or retraction of his previous statement, and therefore the latter language will govern, and Rav will say that that case in the Merchatz, you should have come to the same conclusion as our Mishnah, which is Tfos Lashon Acharon, and so therefore if you look at the language, he said, Shnimasar Zuvim L'Shana, Dinar Zahav L'Chodesh, and so the latter expression, the latter language that he used was Dinar Zahav L'Chodesh, and so given that, that's the governing part of this transaction. And the maskir has the upper hand. If he wants to stay the extra month of the Yibur, he's got to pay the individual. Rav Nachman agrees with Rav over there and says that the socher has to pay if he wants to stay. Even though Rav Nachman paskins the same conclusion as Rav, it is for a different reason. And we'll explain that in a minute or so. Shmuel believes over there that it is a safek. Therefore, if you're at the beginning of the month, the person who's mukzak is the maskir. It's the maskir's property, and he owns it now. The socher wants to stay. He's got to pay, because we have a safek here. Motzimi chavireo lavaraya. We go after the mukzak. The mukzak is the maskir. On the other hand, if he comes at the end of the month, and they want to figure out what to do then, the socher has already lived there. He's done with whatever he has to do. Now the maskir is trying to get money from him, extract money from him. The person who's mukzak in the money is the socher. Therefore, the burden of proof is on the maskir, and we're going to leave it with the socher. And therefore, if it's after the month, the socher doesn't have to pay. Bamsa chodesh, when it's in the middle of the month, that half the month's gone by, where the socher already lived there, and the maskir trying to get money out of him, there's a half of the month remaining to go, where the maskir is the mukzak in the property, and the socher wants to stay, he's got to pay. That's the situation in the case where the chachamim say, chokim, that you split it. Because that's the case where the safek is equally balanced for both parties over here. And therefore the ruling is chokim. So Shmuel believes that when you have these contradictory languages, that it is safek and safek chokim. So what you see from Shmuel's position over there is that he does not believe tfos lashon acharon, but rather that they are chokim. And given that, how can you say now that Shmuel holds like Ben Anas? Shmuel clearly doesn't hold like Ben Anas, based on the Gemara in Boba Metzia, where Shmuel clearly states that the Chamim's position of Chokim is really only in the case where it's the middle of the month. It's not the middle of the month. We go after whoever is the Mukzak, implying that he believes that the whole situation is a Safek. And similarly in our Mishnah, you believe the case is a Safek. And a Motzi Mechaber Alav Harayah. And we don't say, like, Benanas, Tvos Lashon Acharon. Now, that's fine in terms of reconciling with Shmuel's statement that, first of all, that's Benanas' opinion, I disagree. Number two, in the case of Merchatz, it's clear that that's what Shmuel says. But now we have a problem, which is the case of Rabban Shmuel, by the case of the kor that he sold for 30 sela over there, why does Shmuel say he gets to keep it as each saw goes? That sounds like it's Tvos Lashon Acharon. So how do we explain Shmuel's position in that instance? The Gemara says, Elolam Zovelo Svirle. That is Rabban Nas's opinion. I don't hold like it. Vahotam. And what's the reason by the Merchatz? Mishum de Tofitz. That because he's in possession of it. Hachanami. So too in the case of the Sa'abasela, Ha'tofis. He is in possession of it. What Shmuel, in essence, is saying, according to the Gemara now, is everything is a safek when you use these contradictory languages. And the governing principle then is, and therefore, whoever is the muhzak will have the upper hand. In the case of the merchatz, the muhzak depends where you are in the month. If you're at the beginning of the month, the muhzak is the maskir. If you're at the end of the month, the muhzak is the tzocher. In the middle of the month, you have half and half, and therefore chokim. In our Mishnah, we have contradictory language, and the muhzak is the mocher, the seller. And since he is the Mukzak, it'll be the obligation of the Lokeach to prove what he meant in this Safek. And therefore, like the Rashbam said before, if it exceeds by any amount, we will say that he has to refund that, because we will say that the Mukzak, the Mukher, meant Mida Bechevel, the exact amount. The other hand, if it's less than the amount he stated, we'll say that he really meant Hein Chaser and Yeter, more or less, and therefore he doesn't have to compensate the Lokeach for the lack of property that he gave him, because it's subsumed under the Mechila. And so therefore, Shmuel says, Benanas v'ot of our Mishnah, Tvos Lachashon Acharon, I don't subscribe to that. I believe, like the Chachamim, that it's a Safek, and that we just articulated what that would mean in terms of our Mishnah. In the case of Merchatz, we've already explained it. And in the case of Sabasela, it's also a Safek. But over there, it is Metaltalin. Metaltalin, the Muchzak, is whoever's possession it is in. Karka is in the possession of the owner. Metaltalin are in possession of whoever's holding it. Therefore, in the case where he says just kor bishloshim, there he premised the whole transaction on being the complete quantity, and the transaction is not done until he finishes. In the case where he used both languages, which is kor bishloshim sa'a b'sela, again, now we're in a position of safek. We look at who is the muhzak. If he's giving him nothing, the muhzak is the seller. If he's giving him everything, the muhzak is the lokeach. If he's giving him a portion of it, that which he's given him already, the lokeach is a mukzakin. That which he has yet to give, the mocher is a mukzakin. And that's what the conclusion of Rav and Shmuel is over there, that every seller that goes is a completed transaction. So now Rav and Shmuel agree as to the conclusion halachically, but for different reasons. Rav believes that every sa'a that he pours out is a completed transaction because of Tfos Lashon Acharon. We have his latter language which said sa'a b'sela, which means that every sa'a that he gives him, that's already an obligation, it's a kinyan, it's finished, and he has to pay a sela. That then Shmuel says, no, it's a safek. We don't know when he uses these contradictory language what he meant, and therefore we have to look at the mukzak. Over here, the mukzak for the items or the quantity that he's already given is the lokeach. For that which he has yet to give, the mukzak is the mocher. So, in terms of burden of proof, the burden of proof is on the mocher vis-a-vis what he's given already, because the lokeach is mukzak in it, and vis-a-vis that which is to be given afterwards, the mocher is the mukzak in it, and the burden of proof would then be on the lokeach to show that it was one big transaction if he wants to reverse it. Now, the Baal Yetos Tzofot make two important points over here. The first of which is that by the case of Beit HaMerchatz, it looks like that Shmuel believes that when there's a safek in halacha, and someone is tofes, someone grabs the money, that he becomes the muhzak in the item. In our instance, by the case of the merchatz, where the socher, the renter, stays there for the 13th month, the leap year month, then Shmuel says that at the end of the period, the socher is considered to be the muhzak, and it's the obligation of the maskir to prove that he really meant a dinar zahav per month, and not a whole year for 12 zehuvim. Why is the socher considered to be the muhzak? Because he grabbed the property, in essence. He took the property, he used it, and even though it was a sofek, he grabbed it, he's considered or classified as the muhzak. So Baal Yetos Tzofot say, why can't we extrapolate from here to other cases in Shas, which show us that in the case of a sofek, if you're tofes, we won't cause you to disgorge that amount. Because you were tofes, now you become the muhzak. Just like in this case, the Baal Yetos Tzofot say that that's not necessarily the case. V'yesh lomar, the b'shmaitin haynu taima, v'chi lo bada sofa chodesh termin l'odia odia lei. That the reasoning is not because he's tofes, and therefore he's considered to be a mukzak, but rather an underlying assumption, the fact that he lived there without any objection of the maskir, then that's why the socher becomes the mukzak over there. It's not because he grabbed it, it's not because that's considered to be mukzak when you take something's b'safek, but rather the reasoning is because there's an implicit admission by the maskir that the socher is right because he didn't object to him being there during the month. Since he only brought up the issue after the fact, that is, we can say, as if he admitted that the socher belonged there, and therefore the burden of proof is going to be on him. The second thing that the Balei Tosfot point out is that the Gemara had two options over here to explain the position of Shmuel. The Gemara took one option, which is, Olam Zu Velo Svirale, that he says, that's Ben Nanas' opinion, and I don't hold like that, I don't subscribe to it. And therefore the Gemara went on to explain the reasoning behind Shmuel's position by Merchatz, which is Safek, and also by the case of Sabasela Safek, and then we go after the Mukhzak in all of these cases. Balei Tosfot say that you could have equally said the opposite, which is saying that the Olam Zu Visvirale, that Shmuel says, that's the opinion of Ben Nanas, and I hold like it, and I hold like Tfos Lashon Acharon. So that would explain the case of Sabasela, because there the latter language was Sabasela, and therefore he would be the Mukhzak as every Sa'ah goes through, and it would be a completed transaction, just like Rav's position. And in the case of Merchatz, the reason we don't say Tfos Lashon Acharon is because what we said already before in Rav's position. It's a safek there whether his second statement was a reversal, or second statement was an explication on the first statement. And since we don't know, there's a real safek over there. And as the Rashbam said before, even Ben Nanas might agree by the case of Merchatz that it is a safek, and therefore that's the halacha. So too, you could say the same thing in Shmuel. The Tosafot says, in Ochanami, the Gemara could have answered this, but there are some mitigating factors which the Rashbam discusses. The Rashbam says, for a number of reasons, the Gemara favored this option. The first of which is the Lashon of Zu. Whenever the Mora says, this is the opinion of Zu, and a vowel, there's an argument, generally, or almost always, it means that the Amora does not subscribe to that position. So that would also cause us, or make us favor, the position that says Zo Velo Svirle, that that's the opinion of Ben Nanas, and Shmuel doesn't hold like it. Number two is that the Rashbam proves, from the Machloket Rav and Shmuel, by the case of Merchatz, that Shmuel clearly does not believe that normally it's Tfos Lashon Acharon, and here it's just a Safek. Because Shmuel does not argue with Rav with regards to the fact that that Mishnah by Merchatz is the position of the Chachamim. Rav says that, Shmuel agrees. That means that the only way that Shmuel can argue on Rav is in the explanation of what's happening in that Mishnah. If Rav said that that's the position of the Chachamim because Ben Nanas would have been believed Tfos Lashon Acharon, Shmuel is holding the same thing, that the position there is that of the Chachamim, and therefore he has to explain the Mishnah and Merchatz as being an issue of Safek in the position of the Chachamim. He's not disagreeing with Rav that that position there is the Chachamim, but rather just telling us that the position of the Chachamim is that it is a Sveika, and I must hold like that Safek. So therefore you can't explain the Mishnah and Merchatz as being Ben Nanas, but just in that case he would agree. Because Rav says, first of all, it's not Ben Nanas, it is the Chachamim. And Shmuel agrees with that. He doesn't disagree that it's the Chachamim over there. It's the Chachamim and it's Miplal Safek. So if Shmuel already believes that the Mishnah is authored by the Chachamim, then we can't suggest in his position that he holds like Ben Nanas, but the Merchatz is a case where we don't know what the language means. He agrees that it's already the Chachamim. And if it's already the Chachamim, that's clear that he can't explain the Mishnah in Merchatz as being Ben Nanas' opinion. And that's why the Gemara goes in the direction of saying that Shmuel does not subscribe to that position of Ben Nanas. As well as the fact that the Balei Tosfot know that that was also a Tzrichuta. The Gemara just did it because it was compelled to explain that, why Rav had to make both statements, but that's not necessarily the first choice they would have made in explaining the Mishnah there in Merchatz. Therefore, you'd favor saying that Shmuel means Zo Velo Svirle. Now, the Gabi de Halacha, we paskin like Rav Nachman, because in general, when we have any halacha that involves a din, the halacha is like Rabbi Yachman, because he was a dayanai, he was a dayan, and therefore he's given extra consideration when it comes to halachot. Now, Rav Nachman over there said this similar to Rav, that it is the obligation of the socher, but not for the reasoning of Rav, because Rav believed it was because of Tfos Lashon Acharon that it was the obligation of the socher. Rav Nachman subscribes to his Rebbe Shmuel's position that it is a safek, but the difference is that he believes, not like Shmuel, where the mukzak is determined through the month, that in the beginning of the month, the maskir, at the end of the month, the socher, in the middle of the month, they split it. Rather, the Rav Nachman says that the safek is always that the maskir is mukzak. That is because the safek arose at the beginning of the month. It wasn't when you come to the end of the month, all of a sudden now there's a safek. The safek existed already from the beginning of the month. At the beginning of the month, the person that's mukzak is the maskir. And that's why Rav Nachman believes that it's always the obligation of the socher to pay in that case, because the maskir is always deemed to be the mukzak, because the safek that arose was at the beginning of the month. So he agrees with Shmuel that it's a safek over there. He just says that he disagrees with regards to who's considered or classified as the mukhzak over there. And therefore, if we explain that case of the merchatz in Boba Metzia, according to Rav Nachman's position, that means that we would subscribe to the position of the Chachamim that it's a safek. And that means that in our case here as well, in the Mishnah, the halacha will not be like Ben Nanas, Tvos Lashon Acharon, but rather safek. And given that it's a safek, then the mukhzak here is the mocher. And the lokeach would have to prove otherwise. Otherwise, they would always be advantageous to the mocher side that we said before, pachot shebelishonot. And in the case of Saba Sela, we already explained that also is a safek according to Shmuel and Rav Nachman. It's just a question of who is the mukzak over there. And there, even Rav Nachman will agree to Shmuel that the mukzak by metaltlin has to do with who's in possession of the item. And therefore, the halacha will be like Rav and Shmuel by Saba Sela. The halacha will be like Rav Nachman by the explanation of the case of Merchatz. In our case over here, the halacha will be like Chachamim. The way that Shmuel explains that it's a safek, but according to the sheet of Rav Nachman as well, which is it is a safek, and therefore the mukzak is the mocher, and the motzi mechaver araya, the burner proof will be on the lokeach to show otherwise. And therefore, the way that the Rashbam expressed it before, if there's too much land given, you would have to refund it immediately, because we would say that the exact language governed. And in a case where he gave too little property, we would say that hein chaser hein yeter, the more or less would govern, and therefore the transaction would be considered a mechila, and the lokeach buyer could not insist on a refund for the portion that he didn't get in the property unless it exceeded the level of mechila, which is rovakav l'sa'a. Okay, now the Gemara continues and says, Amr Huna Amre Bei Rav. So now we have Rav Huna's a Talmud of Rav, says over in the name of the Beit Midrash of Rav, or in essence the name of Rav, Istara Me'amoi, Me'amoi, Me'amoi Istara, Istara. So here he makes statements that are contradictory, which is that he says that this transaction that we are engaging in, you are going to pay me for whatever the merchandise is, an istara. Istara is a sela, but it's a sela medina, which means that it's a copper sela instead of being the silver sela. The silver sela is the sela tsuri. A sela tsuri has 4 dinari kesef in it. A sela medina, which is a copper sela, is 1/8 of a sela tsuri. So therefore, in terms of dinarim, it's the equivalent of half a dinar. Again, a sela tsuri is made out of silver, has 4 dinar in it, and the sela medina is 1/8 of a sela tsuri. If you do that relationship, then it means that the sela medina, or this istara, is worth half a dinar. Now, based on the Gemara in Kiddushin that gives us the conversion rates for different coins, if you take a dinar, we know that a dinar is equal to 6 ma'ah. That means that if a sela medina is worth half a dinar, it's worth 3 ma'ah. We also know that each ma'ah is worth 2 pundion. That means 3 ma'ah is worth 6 pundion. And we also know that every pundion is worth 2 isar. That means that it's worth 12 isarin. Every isar is worth 8 prutot, or in essence 12 times 8, which is 96 prutot. And that's what the meaning of the word ma'ah over here is. The word ma'ay is not like the standard ma'ot in the Gemara, which means a ma'ah kesef, which means a dinar kesef. Over here, ma'ay means prutot, or a copper coin, a pruta, the smallest denomination that they had. So now he gives him two prices. He gives him a price of an istara, which we already explained is a sela medina that's worth 96 prutot. But then he tells him a price of me'amoy, 100 prutot. So which one is the price? Is the price 96 prutot an istara? Or is the price 100 moi, 100 prutot? So the way that the statement of Rav comes along, it says, istara mea moi. If he gives both of those languages, mea moi. The mea moi governs. The 100 ma'ot, the 100 prutot governs. Mea moi istara. If on the other hand he says 100 prutot, and then istara, which is 96 prutot, istara, then he definitely means an istara. Or in essence, what he is saying is, tfos lashon acharon. That you go after the latter language that is being said. The Gemara says, Ha'amra Rav Chadazimna. Don't we know that from Rav's position as well? Dama Rav, by the case of Merchatz, he says, Iyavai Hatom. Had I been there when Rabbi and Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yossi gave their psak, have you even a kule the maskir? I would have given all the money to the maskir, because in that case he says, Shneimasar Zubim the Shana, Dinar Zahav the Chodesh. And therefore, Tfos Lashon Acharon means Dinar Zahav the Chodesh. That means the Socher's got to pay for the extra month in the Hebrew year. When there's an extra month there, he's got to pay for it. And so Rav always says, Tfos Lashon Acharon. So what the Gemara is asking is, didn't Rav already tell us this? Now Rav is telling us, the truth is, in 3 different places, that Tfos Lashon Acharon. He's telling us that by the case of the Merchatz, that it's Tfos Lashon Acharon. Telling us by the case of the coins here, the Stara and the Me'emoi, Tfos Lashon Acharon. He also tells us by the case of the Sa'ab Sela, Tfos Lashon Acharon. that in the case where he says that it's kor bishloshim sabasela, every sa'ah is a completed transaction. So the Gemara is asking, why does Rav have to repeat here a position that we already know from him? So the girsa that we have in the Gemara Tavir is based on the Rashbam's girsa. And the answer of the Gemara is, Maudatema, I would have thought Perushe Kamifaresh. I would have thought, in that case of Merchatz, Perushe Kamifaresh, that he was really explicating on what he had said earlier. He said first that it is 12 dinarei zahav lishana. He says, you know, I'm afraid it might be a leap year, and therefore I'm going to tell you, or I'm going to explicate and say specifically that it is dinar zahav l'chodesh. So that extra language is what makes us say over there that the maskir has the upper hand. Because that extra language actually clarified for us what he meant by shneimasar zuvim l'shana, and that is that it's a dinar zahav per chodesh. But had he not clarified that position, we would not necessarily say tfos l'shon acharon. So maybe he would have thought that Rav's position by Merchatz is not governed by Tfos Lashon Acharon, but rather Perushe Kameforish. That's what this statement over here comes to teach us, that no, Rav's position is really Tfos Lashon Acharon, and that's the same reasoning by Merchatz. That is the position of the Rashbam, and it fits into the flow of the Gemara. The Gemara is asking, why do I need it over here by Istara and Meimai? I already had it by the case of Merchatz. Gemara's answer is that if I only had the case of Merchatz, I would have thought Perushe Kamifaresh. Therefore, I need this case to definitively tell me that Rav's position is Tfos Lashon Acharon. And so therefore, the Rashbam's explanation over here fits much more smoothly into the Gemara. The problem with the Rashbam's Perush is that the meaning of Perushe Kamifaresh here in the Gemara is different than the beginning of the Daf. The beginning of the Daf, we said Perushe Kamifaresh would mean the original language stands. And his explication is not to say that the din is that he gets a dinar zahav per month, but rather it's just explaining, he's articulating more clearly according to Rabbeinu Gershom, according to the Rashbam, he was giving us halachic implications that the rent was due at the end of every month, or that he could walk away from the deal at the end of every month. But it was not Perushe Kamifaresh coming to tell us that that meant that you get a dinar zahav per chodesh. Over here, the Gemara is explaining Perushe Kamifaresh, the same exact language, and it's defining it differently. It's saying over here that Perushe Kamifaresh means that he actually is explicating in order to clarify that he's going to get a dinar zahav per month, and that would be to his advantage, and therefore he would get paid on the leap year. Nevertheless, despite that difficulty, the Rashbam favors it. He brings the alternative view of Rashi, his grandfather, in the Gemara in Balbetziah. And in the Gemara in Balbetziah, Rashi thinks that the Gemara over there is questioning not why he needed to say it by Istara Ameyamoy, but why he needed to say it by Merchatz, and that would be the girsa that would be found in the Gemara's here that is in the parentheses, which is Eat Marha, had you only told me the case of Merchatz, Veloit Marha, and not the case of Meyamoy, Havamina Mehadar Ka'adurbe. The reason over there, by the case of the Merchatz, we say that he gets paid the maskir no matter what, is because Mehadar Ka'adurbe. He reversed his position. It's clear here that he has contradictory statements. He's making a statement it's 12 per year, and then he's saying that it's a dinar zahav per month. So then when you have contradictory statements, we're going to say that it was definitely a retraction of the previous statement. Over here, by the Istara and the Meimoy, it's not clear that there's a contradiction in the statement. That is because Rashi says what he meant was, I want you to give me a Istara, a really good Sela Medina, that's worth Meyamoy, that's worth 100 prutot. Or the other way around, where he says that I want 100 mutot, that is an Istara, he's saying you can give me even not the best quality prutot, that will equal up to a Sela Medina. So even though you give me 100 prutot, they're only worth really 96 prutot. And so what Rashi says is that the case by Merchatz, it's clear that his statements are contradictory, and therefore we would say that it was Mehadar Ka'adurbe, that he definitely retracted his statement. By the case of Istara Emoi, it's possible that he's trying to define for you what type of coin he wants. He's saying, I want this type of Istara that's going to be worth 100 prutot, a really good Mesela Medina, or the other way around. You could give me even poor quality prutot, that if 100 of them will equal up to a Istara instead of 96. And that's how he reconciles between them, saying that, had we only had the case by Merchatz, I wouldn't have known what to say here by Istara Emoi. Kamash Malon, Rav comes along to tell us, no, that the reasoning behind both of them is not because one's a retraction and one is Perushe Kamifaresh, and therefore you'd have a different din over here. Both of them have to do with Tfos Lashon Acharon, and that's the governing principle over here. That's the way that Rashi learns the Gemara in Baba Metzia. The Rashbam rejects that understanding of Rashi because he says I don't understand. And istara is 96 prutot. 100 prutot is not 96 prutot. They are definitely contradictory statements. There's no way you can explain, like Rashi, that one is subsumed in the other. And therefore, it's clearly not the way to explain it over here. As well as the fact that the Gemara asked from the case of Merchatz. Gemara says, oh, now I know this din by Me'amayin istara. Why did I need that case of Merchatz? And so the Gemara is coming on to explain the necessity for Merchatz, not the necessity for Me'amay and Yistore. That's the way that the Rashbam learns, rejecting that position of his grandfather Rashi. Interesting enough, the Balei Tosafot over here say that maybe both of them are right, and it depends on which Gemara. In the Gemara and Baba Metzia, the language of the Gemara and the flow of the Gemara favors Rashi's interpretation. That's the way Rashi explains it over there, because over there the Gemara asks, on the case of Maskir, didn't Rav already say this once before by the case of Me'amoye and Istara? Whereas over here, the Gemara says, by the case of Me'amoye and Istara, didn't the Gemara already say by Merchatz? So the dynamic of the Gemara in the two places will favor the different opinions. Therefore, the Balei Tosafot say, maybe Rashi's explanation in Baba Metzia is right, because over there, the Gemara wants to know, why do I need Merchatz if I already had the Me'amoye and Istara? The Gemara comes to explain why Me'amoye and Istara is not necessarily the reasoning of Rav is because of Tfos Lashon Acharon, and that's why you have to say it by Merchatz. Our Gemara is starting from the opposite position, which is, Gemara is asking, why do I need Me'amoye and Istara if I already have Merchatz? And that would favor the position of the Rashbam. And therefore the Dalei Tosfot say, maybe they're both right, but it depends on which Gemara, because the starting points are different in the two Gemaras. Based on that, Rav's position across the board is Tfos Lashon Acharon. And that means, in the case of Merchatz, you go after the latter language. In the case of Me'amoye Istara, you go after the latter language. In the case of Kor B'Shloshim, Sa'abesela, you also go after the latter language. And in all of those instances, if you flip the language, the din would flip, because you always go after Tfos Lashon Acharon. On the other hand, Shmuel believes in all those cases, Sfuke Misfakele. We have no idea, we don't know what it is, it's a Safek. And therefore, for Shmuel, it doesn't matter whether you flip the language or you don't flip the language. The order of the language isn't important because it's a safek. So no matter which order you say it in, the safek will exist. And therefore, in the case of Kor B'Shloshim, Sa'abesela, we go after the muhzak over there because it's a safek, no matter which order the language is in. Merchatz, we go after where we are in time. If it's before the month, it's the maskir's. After the month, it's the socher's advantage. Middle of the month, they split it. Because again, it's a suffix, and it doesn't matter which order of the language. And in our case over here, where Shmuel does not express an opinion, it seems to be that it would also be a suffix. And therefore, since the mocher is the one who is trying to be motzi the money, the advantage would go to the lokeach, and the burden of proof would be on the mocher, unless the mocher has yet to give the item or the merchandise to him, because then he'd be the muchzak, and then the burden of proof would be on the lokeach. But again, it wouldn't matter which order the language is in. In both those instances, it would be a suffix according to Shmuel. Now the Balei Tosafot then go through, why do we need all three cases? For the teachers about the din of Rav. It says, V'itstria kol talat milei de Rav. We need all three different positions of Rav. Da'o istira, it the meimar, delavi mitam tfos lashon acharon, mishum de perushe kamifarish kaperish rashi. Because if we only had the case of istara and me'amoyi, then you could favor that position of Rashi that says that it's just coming to explain what type of coin you want. And therefore, you wouldn't conclude that Rav's position is Tfos Lashon Acharon. And if you only had the case of Hamaskir, by the case of the Merchatz, also we wouldn't know Tfos Lashon Acharon, because then you could explain it like the Rashbam, which is that Perushei Kamifaresh, that is simply the reason that we go after the latter language is not because of Tfos Lashon Acharon, but rather we see that explication as an explanation that he wants a monthly payment, and that would mean that he gets paid in the leap year. But that's because his statements are not contradictory, it's simply an explication on the first statement. Or, because he holds like Rav Nachman, that the chazak of the karka goes always with the maskir, and therefore if it's a safek, we would always favor the maskir. So for those two possibilities, make it that we can't prove anything from the case of Merchatz, that Tfos Lashon Acharon. Had you only had that position of Kor B'Shloshim Sa'abesela, then you wouldn't have known necessarily Tfos Lashon Acharon. You could have held like Shmuel that it was a safek, and then it's a safek, the muhzak is the one who gets it. Therefore, if you flip the language, the din would be the same, and not Tfos Lashon Acharon. The Ri says that maybe all of these explanations and all these Mishnayot, all these cases are true. And how do we know that Rav really holds Tfos Lashon Acharon? What the Balei Tosafot say in the end is that all of these explanations are really not primary explanations, they're just the dochak. And therefore, if you, on the aggregate, you take them all together, you would conclude that Rav's position is Tfos Lashon Acharon. So that's what the Balei Tosfot point out, that all three cases over here, the aggregation of all three cases, prove to us that Rav's position is Tfos Lashon Acharon. Because in each case individually, you could not extrapolate or come to the conclusion that the real din that Rav has is Tfos Lashon Acharon. Because in each of those cases, there's an alternate explanation that gets to the same conclusion. Shmuel, in the case of the Kor B'Shloshim Sa'ah, Rav Nachman, in the case of the Merchatz, or the possibility of the Reshbam's explanation, Prushei Kamefaresh. In the case of Historia Moi, the possibility of, like Rashi's explanation, that it is just explaining what type of coin, and not a contradictory statement where he's saying Tfos Lashon Acharon. But if you take them all together, then you know that Rav's position is Tfos Lashon Acharon, because they don't share the common denominator between them about all of these languages, they're all different. In each case, he goes after the latter language, and therefore if you flip the language, the din would flip as well, because Rav believes Tfos Lashon Acharon, you need all three cases. And then the Balei Tosfot will point out that we need all three statements of Shmuel, because the fact that Shmuel puts the case of Merchatze Babada Emtza Chodesh doesn't prove necessarily that he holds that it's a Safek, but rather it could be that he holds that it's Perushei Kamifarish. Over there's uncertainty in the language, and that's what causes the Safek. But maybe, generally, he would believe Tfos Lashon Acharon. And in the case of Rishon Kana, also over there, you might have thought he holds a Grav Tfos Lashon Acharon, not because it's a fake and we go after the Muchzak. And therefore, it comes here to say, Zovelo Svirle, in our case here, where he says that our Mishnah is bananas, the Chamin disagree and say Pachoche B'Lashonot. And then, there and there, we know that he believes the Chamin believe that it's a fake. How do we know that he subscribes to that? Is that because of Emtzah Chodesh? When you go back to the case of Merchatz, that it proves to us that then he must believe Zovelo Svirle, and therefore his position is then a Safek and not Tfos Lashon Acharon. And the reasoning behind the Rishon Kana is because of that exact Safek, and we learn from that a Tfisa, when you're a Tofes, when the buyer already gets a portion of it, that Tfisa is enough to consider him to be the Muchzak in the item, and therefore the transaction is concluded, each component part of the transaction closes as each Sa'ah is passed. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Kuvav Amud Aleph.